Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, January 14th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The ZANU-PF faction backing ousted party vice president Joyce Mujuru says it has engaged lawyers to explore ways to challenge the party's December Congress, which they allege was illegal.
We are taking the legal route. We are consulting our lawyers. As soon as the consultation process is over, then we can move on.
Health ministers are responsible for HIV/AIDS in the Southern African Development Community, or SADC region, are holding a meeting in Zimbabwe's Victoria Falls to discuss health approaches to various diseases.
Yes, the total number of our new infections has actually decreased. Survival rate is improved. Uptake of ARDS, another AIDS treatment program, is improved.
And Zimbabwe says the number of tourist arrivals in the country increased to 2 million last year from 1.8 million in 2013.
The ZANU-PF faction backing ousted party vice president Joyce Mujuru says it has engaged lawyers to explore ways to challenge the party's December Congress, which they allege was illegal. Some political analysts predict the party is now headed for a split. Former Secretary for Administration Didmus Mtasa released a statement yesterday saying the Congress was null and void. Mtasa, who was referring to himself as the party secretary for administration, though he was replaced by Ignatius Chombo, claims to be representing the majority of ZANU-PF supporters, irked by the lack of internal democracy in the party. Attempts to reach party spokesman Simon Kayamoyo were futile. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu spoke with expelled former ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo.
I completely agree with him. I think Blessing, I discussed with you during and after Congress and indicated that this was a farce. It was a total failure. It didn't take into account the feelings of the people. So we totally agree with Mtasa. Almost everything that he has said, absolutely correct. And I think members of ZANU-PF, as well as the generality of the Zimbabwean people, were waiting for this kind of statement. And we have emphasized, stressed that we can't be led by Amafikizolo. No ways. You know, these are reactionary counter-revolutionaries who managed to infiltrate and worm their way in the party. And as far as we are concerned, they are just a bunch of tricksters and cooks.
So what are you going to do to challenge that Congress? Are you taking the legal route, the political route? What exactly are you planning to do?
Yes, we are taking the legal route. We are consulting our lawyers as soon as the consultation process is over, then we can move on. But we can't leave the thing as it is. No way. These people are a minority. They don't have people. They just managed to get through this through hide and seek by having vote of no confidence passed on people who were elected by people. And these people who went to Congress were people who were appointed, not elected by people. And the amendment of the Constitution gave power to one person, and we are paying a price for it. So as far as we are concerned, we have to do something about it.
That was expelled former ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
A political analyst Alex Magaisa of Kent University in London says it will be interesting to watch the ZANU-PF race in the by-elections.
We have a very good opportunity presently because I think there are by-elections that have been called by President Mugabe in Mount Darwin and Chirumanzu, where Vice President Mnangagwa and former Vice President Mujuru used to be MPs. There may also be other constituencies that may come up in the next few weeks. It will be interesting to see if ZANU-PF is going to obviously field more than one candidate in that regard. In other words, will the Mujurus and the Mutasas of ZANU-PF be happy to go with the candidates that are sponsored by ZANU-PF, or will they be willing to back any candidates, independent or otherwise, who may come up to challenge in those elections? So it's a good test to see the seriousness of Mutasa and his colleagues, whether or not they are prepared to mount their challenges against their own political party.
On the legal avenues that they are saying they are exploring to regain the control of the party, what are their options?
You know, those who have followed my work before Congress, I did indicate in my blog that Mujuru and her allies did have legal options before Congress to challenge the constitutionality of the amendment that ZANU-PF was carrying out at the time. So, in my opinion, clearly there was a violation, a contravention of the constitution regarding the timelines that had to be followed, the procedures that had to be undertaken. And I think those procedures are fundamental. They were not followed, and Mujuru and the allies have, I think, a sound legal basis to challenge the manner in which the amendments were undertaken.
That was political analyst Alex Magaisa of Kent University in London speaking with Studio 7. A reporter Ntungamili Nkomo also speaks to political analyst Nkululeko Siwanda of Huddersfield University about this issue.
It is an unexpected statement, especially the fact that there is some some criticism for President Mugabe and how he runs the party. I think that is certainly very unusual, but doesn't bode well for them because they have been with President Mugabe for a very long time, when many in the opposition and many in the human rights and civil sector have been saying that the president has acted against the constitution or has been ill-advised in terms of how to carry out his duties in line with the law. However, I think that it is telling, or that it is certainly a welcome thing, that you begin to see some form of criticism taking place from within the ranks of ZANU-PF or from members who have been formerly senior and know a lot about ZANU-PF of the president and the way he's running the party. I think that is an opportunity for many of those who have been saying so to say, look, we were not just saying things, it is true. But at this stage, I think it is doubtful whether or not the statement means that they could do anything that could be transformational.
Does this statement mark a turning point in the ZANU-PF political dynamics? In other words, do you see the alleged Mujuru faction splintering away from the mainstream ZANU-PF?
A lot of people would hasten to say that that is going to be the case, and that if Mujuru were to form a splinter group, she would be successful. Lessons from politics elsewhere in the world and in Zimbabwe indeed will instruct very well and very clearly that because ZANU-PF has such been a unipolar power system in which power has been heavily invested in one individual, the only opportunity that the Mujuru faction has is indeed if Mugabe leaves power anytime soon, therefore allowing some of the power to dissipate.
That was political analyst Nkululeko Siwanda of Huddersfield University speaking with Studio 7 from Britain.
The Tsvangirai MDC has dismissed as unconstitutional moves by a provincial minister to set up a shadow council comprising war veterans to oversee the operations of the MDC-led Mutare City Council. In a statement, the MDCT said Manicaland Provincial Affairs Minister Mandi Chimene's announcement confirms the fact that ZANU-PF has no regard whatsoever for democracy and the people's rights to elect their own leadership. The party said the plan is a brazen assault on democracy, constitutionalism, and the rule of law.
It said any parallel structure would be patently illegal and unconstitutional, and the MDC and the courts will not allow it. The MDCT further noted that even the mere thought of an illegal and parallel structure to run a city is testament to the fact that the level of chaos in ZANU-PF has reached alarming levels. Chimene told War Veterans last Sunday that she would act as mayor under the proposed structure. She accused the city council of being clueless on how to run council affairs, hence the decision to appoint a shadow council to keep them on their toes.
Health ministers responsible for HIV/AIDS in the Southern African Development Community, or SADC region, are holding a meeting in Zimbabwe's Victoria Falls to discuss health approaches to various diseases. The meeting, which started yesterday, ends on Friday with a commemoration of SADC Malaria Day. Apart from HIV/AIDS, the ministers are also focusing on status reports from member states on critical health sectors such as malaria, tuberculosis, and Ebola. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Dr. Gerald Gwinji, Permanent Secretary of the Health Ministry, who says Zimbabwe and other SADC member states are making concerted efforts in tackling critical health issues.
In terms of the overall trend, I think we will be presenting to the ministers that as a region we have made gains. Yes, the total number of our new infections has actually decreased. Survival rate is improved. Uptake of NAAT, another AIDS treatment program, has improved. Survival of mothers who are HIV positive and are pregnant is improved. And the outcome from births of the children born of mothers who are HIV positive is also improved. So in general, there is an improvement. But we will be focusing on the youth, strengthening sexual and reproductive health, integrating that with HIV, because that's where we see that the rate of particular sexual transmitted infection has sort of peaked in certain areas and decreased.
By the end of the week, SADC will be commemorating the World Malaria Day. How has SADC decided to tackle the issue of malaria?
Again, it's a country and regional approach, sub-sectoring of the region itself, so that we focus on areas where we have challenges. You may have heard of the Elimination Aid effort, in which we are starting with those countries that are on the forefront with low transmission rates, and we are moving towards the elimination in those countries. This is a regional effort starting from the southernmost part of our region, including South Africa, Lesotho, Swaziland, Botswana, and Namibia, who are on the forefront of elimination, with Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and the DRC supporting that effort.
The highlight within Africa and, of course, the SADC region, end of last year, coming into this year, is the issue of Ebola. Are the contingencies changing as we look at the crisis?
Continuous process, but currently we are really in preparedness mode with a lot of surveillance, a lot of training, and a lot of preparation just in case we have an outbreak in any one of our member states.
That was Dr. Gerald Gwinji, the Permanent Secretary of the Health Ministry, on the line from Victoria Falls with reporter Tatenda Gumbo.
The number of tourist arrivals in Zimbabwe increased to 2 million last year from 1.8 million in 2013. This announcement by Tourism Minister Walter Mzembe today comes 2 days after Harare received a vote of confidence from the respected New York Times newspaper, which named Zimbabwe as one of the top 52 destinations tourists should visit this year. Minister Mzembe tells reporter Ntungamili Nkomo he is happy with the New York Times endorsement as well as the surging arrivals.
It's an endorsement of brand Zimbabwe, coming as it does on the back of a very successful 2013 when we hosted the UNWTO General Assembly, the 20th session, which was attended by excess of 144 countries, over 50 ministerial representations, 400 media, 800 affiliate organizations, arguably the most successful General Assembly in the UNWTO family since the inception of the General Assemblies. So I think it registered with the world that we are a peaceful destination, secure, with a very attractive product, as it were.
How would you characterize the tourism industry at the moment?
Well, we've just broken the 2 million barrier. I'm signposting a 5 billion tourism economy by the year 2020, 5 million arrivals,
5% contribution to GDP, what I popularly dub here as the 5-5-15-20-20 vision for the tourism sector.
Countries like the United States are heavily reliant on local tourism. Is that something that you are encouraging as the minister? And are there any incentives for local tourists?
It is tourism that is going to be the catalyst for economic recovery, because with minimum but significant investment, we can position it to basically provide the much-needed cash flow in the economy. And what it takes is to receive visitors, give them a good experience that will make them retain again. How do we get there? We must facilitate the accessibility of our destination.
That was Tourism Minister Walter Mzembe on the line with reporter Ntungamile Nkomo from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
schools in Zimbabwe opened for the first term today, with some parents crying foul over school fee increases.
And some fuel sellers allegedly tamper with garage pumps ahead of a government deadline to reduce fuel prices. Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
An Egyptian appeals court says ousted President Hosni Mubarak and his two sons will get a retrial in the embezzlement case that earned them multi-year sentences last year. The court in Cairo announced its decision Tuesday in a move that rolls back the only remaining conviction against Mr. Mubarak. Judicial sources say Mr. Mubarak, currently detained at a military hospital, could be freed at some point. But a security official told Egypt's official MENA news agency that will not happen until the judiciary orders his release.
A French President Francois Hollande stood before the flag-draped coffins and praised their heroism, awarding the officers posthumously the nation's prestigious Legion d'Honneur. Funerals were also held on Tuesday in Jerusalem for four Jewish victims of last week's terror spree. Convening for the first time since the massacre, France's National Assembly observed a minute of silence honoring the 17 victims in a special session on Tuesday.
And a top Lord's Resistance Army commander who surrendered to U.S. forces last week will be handed over to the International Criminal Court. Ugandan Army spokesman Paddy Ankunda said in a Twitter message today that Dominic Ongwen will be tried at the ICC in The Hague. He said Ongwen will be transferred to The Hague by authorities in the Central African Republic, where he turned himself in on January 6. Ongwen surrendered to U.S. military advisors who are helping a Ugandan-led force tasked with hunting down LRA fighters in Central Africa. The LRA is accused of killing and kidnapping tens of thousands of people over the past 3 decades, first in an uprising against the Ugandan government, then as a roving band of fighters in Congo, South Sudan and the Central African Republic. Ongwen is one of 5 LRA leaders charged by the ICC with war crimes and crimes against humanity.
Schools opened for the first term today in Zimbabwe, with calls by the Minister of Education for headmasters not to send back students who have not yet paid school fees. In a statement, the ministry reminded headmasters that they are not allowed to turn back students in a nation where people are struggling to make ends meet. There were reports that some schools are already sending back students who have not yet paid school fees. Studio 7 failed to reach Education Minister Lazarus Dokora as his mobile phone was not being answered. Indications are that some schools have increased the fees by at least 5%. At the same time, the Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe says most of its members in some parts of Mashonaland region and Manicaland province have failed to reach their workplaces because of the poor state of roads due to heavy rains that pounded the country in the past few weeks. The union's national coordinator, Brighton Makunike, told Studio 7 the other problem their members are facing is that of accommodation, especially at schools in resettlement areas where teachers are forced to live in squalid conditions.
Currently, we have received the reports from our members that they can't access their workplaces, mostly in the rural areas where the Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe is administratively active due to the floods. And at the same time, they've also received the reports from their various waiting stations, but some of our members are teaching in the remote areas where there hasn't been enough accommodation in schools, and possibly the standard of the accommodation is not suitable for human habitation. They are living in almost squatter settlements, shanties. I'm making a reference to those areas that were previously used as farmhouses, which have been converted to schools. There hasn't been enough accommodation, and with this weather pattern, they can't be accommodated.
Which areas are most affected?
Matola and West, where currently 11 lives and the valuable properties have been destroyed in Matola and Central and the isolated parts in Manikar and the provinces. This has been an issue that we have been consistently raising through the our employer and lobbying again through some of our developmental partners that there is an urgent need to look into the issues, the working and living conditions of the rural teachers. It's an issue that we have been saying time and again that their welfare has been neglected for quite some time. And this is the issue that we are actually currently engaging with the government.
That was Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe National Coordinator Brighton Makunike in Harare.
Some fuel stations in Zimbabwe's Manicaland province are reportedly tampering with fuel pumps ahead of a government deadline tomorrow to adjust fuel prices as crude oil prices continue to fall on the international market. Motorists in the provincial capital, Mutare, claim that some fuel sellers have altered garage pump meters in a way that reduces the quantity of fuel sold to buyers. Our reporter Loida Moyo reports.
Irate motorists say they are being ripped off as most fuel service stations are selling petrol and diesel far below the normal quantities per litre. They claim that a litre of fuel being sold appears to be less than what is displayed on fuel meter readings. Mutare Kombi driver Ivan Pasi says he has fallen prey to such activities as he recently bought some fuel which did not take him to his intended destination. The driver says he used to buy 5 litres of fuel to reach his home, but when he bought the same quantity recently at a city garage, he was stuck in the woods.
The petrol that one buys fails to take you where one needs to go, as it would be less despite showing the correct quantities and volumes bought. We suspect that these people are tampering with the pumps.
Another motorist, Tawanda Mnemo, who drives a taxi in the city, is convinced that some service stations are cheating local people through tampering service station meters. Mnemo says only a few garages in the city are transparent in selling fuel.
It is unfair business practice as we do not get what we would have bought. It is also an inconvenience as well as the traveling public gets a shock of their life when they are stuck with passengers on board. They just want to maximize profits.
Kombi driver Patrick Zuse says he has been stuck with passengers on numerous occasions without knowing the reason until recently when he was tipped off by colleagues of the shaded fuel operations at some service station.
I see, what 2 trips you wanted it, 5 liters.
It is clear that these people tune the pumps, as with a 5 liter, we normally travel 2 trips, and if it is less than that, we cannot travel the 2 trips as usual, and we have had such experiences in the past.
But a petrol attendant at one service station in the city, Total Garage, maintains that their service station is not engaged in such activities. The attendant, who does not want to be identified by name, says their petrol and diesel pumps are regularly tested and they do not have to tune them up.
At our garage, we do not have such things as our pumps are tested periodically. It is impossible to tamper with the pumps here as we have supervisors. However, we have heard of such issues at other service stations in Mutare.
Studio 7 was unable to get a comment from owners of local service stations. The government last week directed that fuel prices be reduced by tomorrow as the cost of crude oil has crashed on the world market to about $40 per barrel. The government ordered that petrol price be reduced by at least 20 cents. Currently, a liter of petrol on average costs US $1.50. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mtare, this is Reda Moyo.
And now, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of Labor has awarded $10 million toward a cooperative agreement with an NGO to implement a project addressing exploitative labor among youth in Ethiopia. The effort, to be conducted with the group World Vision, aims to help vulnerable youth in Ethiopia develop the skills they need to make a successful transition into good jobs. We know when youth are provided skills, training, and career services that align with needs in the jobs market, they are less likely to be drawn into exploitative labor, Deputy Undersecretary of Labor for International Affairs Carol Pierce said in announcing the award. The project will promote education and vocational training opportunities and seek to enhance livelihoods and access to social protection programs for youth and their households, focusing specifically on the needs of girls. The project aims to address exploitative child labor by providing youth ages 14 to 17 with marketable skills and support to secure decent work. The project will also support President Obama's Young African Leaders Initiative. Since 1993, the ILAB has produced reports to raise awareness globally about child labor and forced labor. ILAB has also provided funding for more than 280 projects in more than 94 countries to combat the worst forms of child labor by providing assistance to vulnerable children and their families. Based in Washington State, World Vision is a nonprofit humanitarian organization conducting relief, development, and advocacy activities in its work with children, families, and their communities in nearly 100 countries to help them reach their full potential by tackling the causes of poverty and injustice. In its 2013 report on human rights practices, the U.S. Department of State noted that the lack of labor inspectors and controls prevented the Ethiopian government from enforcing the law. The resources for inspections and the implementation of penalties were extremely limited. This project builds on the successes of the Ethiopians Fighting Against Child Exploitation project that was also implemented by World Vision in 2011 to 2014.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when Gibson Blessing will talk with you, the listeners, about schools opening in Zimbabwe today.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And Jonga, we go to our mailbag. And our first email today comes from Panache in Mount Darwin, who says, guys, your time is too short. May you please add another 2 hours. We love the way you operate.
That's a compliment. And the other writer says, I just want to greet my parents in Chitungwiza, Harare. I wish to say Happy New Year. My name is Killer Cool.
And another Happy New Year message from Fedi Chamba. He says, I want to say Happy New Year to my family and wife.
And the other writer is Chikura Francis, who says, I wish the Chikaura and the Gwatizo families a successful 2015. May God bless all our activities and let God guide us throughout the new year.
Thank you very much for your emails. Please keep them rolling in to Zimbabwe in dance hall music, Jonga. You know, it's just, you know, everywhere in Zimbabwe, everyone is playing dance hall. Now we recap today's top stories.
The ZANU-PF faction backing ousted party vice president Joyce Mujuru says it has engaged lawyers to explore ways to challenge the party's December Congress, which they allege was illegal.
SADC health ministers are meeting in Victoria Falls to discuss health approaches to various diseases in the region.
And Zimbabwe says the number of tourist arrivals in the country increased to 2 million last year from 1.8 million in 2013.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Sandekile Mhlanga. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.